For example, a dump truck with a high clearance. It can easily hit or snag a branch and knock it off without even knowing it happened. And if a vehicle backs into the trunk of a tree, it can cause significant damage to the tree trunk. Causing damage to the bark of a tree makes it work hard and can kill it. When in doubt, respect the TPZ fence. It's the easiest way to avoid hitting a tree and to protect yourself and your team. As you dive into your project, remember to think of our trees and their roots. Check out your construction plan for details on your site's access points and nearby trees, or talk to your general contractor or the project manager to become familiar with the plan. And of course, if you have questions, your assigned project manager and Denver's forestry team are here to help and to make sure you can get the job done.
I love hitting the slopes.
I love the thrill of the ride.
I love the freedom of the trails.
In Colorado, we're all about the outdoor life, pushing limits and taking on new adventures. But sometimes injuries happen. Whether it's pain in your shoulder, elbow, hip, or knee, whether you're an accomplished athlete or a weekend warrior, at Denver Health,
we love a comeback.
So when an unexpected injury suddenly tries to hold you back, don't wait. Turn to the experts who know Colorado's active lifestyle, because they live it too. Make an appointment with our sports medicine team at the Denver Health Orthopedics Center of Excellence. Call 720-973-3678 today or go to denverhealth.org/sports.
The Denver Planning Board reviews and makes recommendations to the Mayor and Denver City Council on rezoning requests, district design standards, and other land use rules. This meeting of the Denver Planning Board begins now.
Okay, let's call to order the Denver Planning Board meeting for Wednesday, June 18th. We have a relatively short agenda. We will go ahead and start with just a roll call to make sure we have quorum, which we are right on. So Mary, go ahead and state your name for the record.
Mary Coddington.
Heidi Majer, Gosha
Khan. And I am Caitlin Quander. And so with the five of us.
Alicia.
Oh, and Alicia's online. Thank you.
So much more.
I got it.
Thank you.
More.
So much more than
Chris.
Hi, Alicia.
Hi. Sorry.
Great. Good to see you. Great. So we have one more than Quorum. All right. We start our meeting with public comment, and this is for general public comment. If you want to share something with Planning Board that is not on our regularly noticed agenda, is there anyone here to do that or online? Seeing none, we will go ahead and move on. We do not have any meeting records for approval. Question of the board, if there is anyone that has any items for recusal or disclosure today. Okay, seeing none, then we'll move into our regular agenda. And I will open the public hearing for official map amendment application 2025I-00022, rezoning 3025 West 3rd Avenue from ESUDX to ERX3. And we have Fritz here to present. We'll do a staff presentation, applicant presentation, if any, and then public comment.
Okay, excellent. Hi, my name is Fritz. I'm a planner with Community Planning Development, here to present a status report on 3025 West 3rd Avenue. Go through the request, the location and context, the process, the review criteria, and finally staff's recommendation. Let's start with the request. This is a rezoning request to go from ESUDX to ERX3 at 3025 West 3rd Avenue. It's a 6,250 square foot property currently containing a single family residence. The applicant's stated intent is to provide for additional attainable housing units and one income restricted unit. Area identified for additional density by the Denver and the West Area Plan. location and context. We are here in Council District 3, represented by Councilmember Jim Torres, and in the Barnum Statistical Neighborhood. The current zoning is ESUDX. It's adjacent to an area also zoned ESUDX and an area zoned EMX3 along Federal Boulevard, and an area zoned OSA, that is Barnum Park, to the west. Current land use is single unit residential. The block it's on is mainly single unit residential. There is a two unit residential use immediately to the south and along Federal Boulevard. We have a mix of industrial, commercial, retail, and vacant property. And of course, park space immediately to the west. The large picture on the left is the current property as seen from the corner of 3rd and Grove. See a single family residence there. Over here to the upper right is the two unit property immediately to the south. And the lower right picture is from the corner of 3rd and Federal, looking at that commercial use, the car lot immediately to the east of the subject property. Property has entered into an affordable housing agreement with Host. The agreement is for 20% of the total dwelling units, which is anticipated to be one of five units in a townhouse development for sale, income restricted at 110% AMI. Unit is to be built on site, a minimum of three bedrooms with a 99-year covenant. Quick note, Leah wanted to be here today. Neither Leah or John were able to make it. I have some comments from Leah that I can sort of summarize here. This commitment in the affordable housing plan is similar to one that was also recently approved in a rezoning in the West area. The commitment of 20% is much higher than the typical EHA, which is usually 8% of units for sale at 80% AMI. Because of the size of the commitment, Host agreed to the 110% AMI. And also comments that for sale affordable housing is highly needed in Denver, and particularly family-sized units like the three-bedroom home to be provided. There's not a fee-in-lieu option. Unit will be built on site, which addresses the anti-displacement intent of the West Area Memo, and there will be a deed restriction in place for 99 years, so the home will be affordable when resold. Happy to return to that at any time. Okay, process. Informational notice for this rezoning went out on April 29th. Planning Board notice went out on June 2nd. We're here at the Planning Board public hearing on June 18th. We're tentatively scheduled for Ludi Committee on July 15th and for a City Council public hearing on August 25th. There are two RNOs in the area, including the Denver INC. The property is in the area represented by the Community Coalition of Barnum, and to the east of Federal Boulevard is the Valverde Neighborhood Association. So we have not received any comment letters from the RNOs, and we have not received any public comments from members of the public to date on this application. Okay, let's move on to the review criteria. There are three review criteria in the Denver Zoning Code. We'll begin with consistency with adopted plans. That includes Comp Plan 2040, Looper Denver, and the West Area Plan. Comprehensive Plan 2040 includes a range of goals and strategies. We see this as consistent with a number of those, including to increase development of affordable housing units close to transit and mixed-use development. You may know that Federal Boulevard is proposed for a bus rapid transit line in the near future, or the somewhat near future, hopefully. We want to see infill development where infrastructure and services are already in place, encourage mixed-use communities, and ensure that neighborhoods are offering a mix of housing types and services for a diverse population. Looper Denver sees the future neighborhood context here as urban edge. Of course, can mean small multi-unit residential and commercial areas embedded in areas that are largely one- and two-unit residences. We have a regular block pattern and a generally lower scale type of development. The future neighborhood place type is high medium residential, which is a mix of mid-scale multi-unit residential options with some neighborhoods serving mixed use along arterial streets or non-local street intersections, sees it as generally up to 5 stories in height, and providing a transition from more intensive uses to a more neighborhood scale. The street types here, West 3rd and Grove Street, are both locals. We're right off Federal Boulevard, which is a mixed-use arterial. It's not in the growth area, it's immediately adjacent to one. West Area Plan defines it as high-medium residential. So in the West Area Plan, that's also a combination of mid-scale multi-unit residential with neighborhoods serving uses. We are located within 1/8 of a mile of a future high-capacity transit station, which is, I think, envisioned to be at the intersection of 2nd and Federal when that Federal Boulevard bus rapid transit project comes through. There's a specific height recommendation in the West Area Plan of up to 5 stories. West Area Plan, of course, includes many priorities related to housing affordability and ensuring that affordable housing is available throughout the West Area. To that end, there was a memo released that re-emphasized this planning guidance, and especially directed us to look at applicant-driven rezonings in the context of meeting those recommendations for maintaining affordable housing and expanding that supply. In general, when we're looking at rezonings out of single unit districts to higher intensity districts in the West Area, we want to see that they have some sort of affordable housing component until we have more broadly applicable tools and strategies. So I think that that affordable housing plan that the applicant has agreed to with HOST is a key element of consistency with adopted plans to ensure affordability as new missing middle housing opportunities arise. Second, public interest. This is a rezoning that is intended to provide additional housing supply in both market price and affordable forms. We see that as consistent, I think, with the public interest and the need for additional housing. Third, consistency with neighborhood context, zone, district purpose and intent. The urban edge neighborhood context is, I think, appropriate here. It's what Blueprint recommends. Residential mixed use districts, I think, are also appropriate here. They're intended to ensure new development contributes positively to established residential neighborhoods in character and encourage affordable housing. And specifically, ERX3, the proposed zone district, is intended to apply to residentially dominated areas served by local or collector streets where we want a building scale of 1 to 3 stories. So our recommendation, finding that all of these review criteria have been met, CPD is recommending approval. And we are happy to discuss or answer any questions that you may have.
Great. Thank you so very much. Is there anyone here on behalf of the applicant?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mention that. The applicant is standing by on Zoom. The applicant communicated to me earlier that they have a kid summer camp pickup that's sort of happening right now. So they're standing by. They don't have a presentation, but I believe they're here to answer questions.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you. And I don't see anyone signed up online, but is there anyone online that would like to speak or here in the room? See none. Okay. I will turn it to the board for questions.
Curiosity question. So given that it's affordability covenant, so is it HOST that's going to do income verification over time for 99 years as the ownership may turn over?
I believe that's correct. I wish we had Leah here, but okay. Yes, I believe that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Just one other question, Fritz. You may be able to answer this, or potentially the applicant. Saw the 110% and the 20% requirement. Is there also a requirement for owner occupancy on the unit?
I would have to go back and look at the actual agreement. I don't know that offhand. I don't think there is.
I don't believe we do have a question. You're sure, like, because it's very similar to the one that you had before, right? It's
right.
Basically copied from the other one.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't think it has it.
It's a for sale though, right?
For sale.
But you mean like they could
the
buy
person
it and
buys
rent
it,
it or
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
My recollection, in at least reviewing the older ones, is no, because they want, like, I think they're allowed to, they can't like rent it out for commercial purposes. I think they can allow like roommates or family members and like rent it in that way. But I think my recollection was that, because there were people who kind of got sideways with it in other areas of town mm-hmm. with the different covenants they had that with the older, yeah. like out.
Mm-hmm. And we can get back to you with that. Like we can check with Laia and they'll check and get back, like, because send you an email with a follow up.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I don't know. Do you happen to know, Adam? Sorry to put you on the spot. In the owner covenants that get recorded by host for sale units, is there a requirement that they be owner occupied, or that it kind of prevents like someone from qualifying, buying it, and then renting it out?
Yep, Adam Hernandez, assistant city attorney. That's definitely in the rules. You can't rent out an affordable for sale unit under the city regs.
Okay, I know it's in like the, if you're following one of the typical processes, but for the negotiated agreements,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
I would doubt they would ever
okay.
Customize that.
Yeah.
Alicia, anything for you, from you? I just want to make sure I didn't miss it. Okay.
Thank you.
I have a question for staff. Do you know if this structure right now currently is owner occupied or if it's a rental unit?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
I can answer that. I don't know if you guys can hear me. This is Jesse Donovan.
Yeah, thank you very much. We should have thought about that.
Hi.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'm the applicant. I am currently walking with my youngest kid to go pick up my oldest kid from camp. So kind of the worst timing ever, but yes, currently it is a rental unit and it's occupied by a rental tenant.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions? Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Any comments or a motion? I think I have, let's go ahead.
Yeah, I have a couple comments. To that line of it has to be owner occupied, one of the concerns I've had for this part of town is that I know a lot of these units are, a lot of these housing units are rented. And so it's great we're getting a for sale deed restricted unit, but now we're displacing a renter. And so I would just encourage the city to think about, is there ever an appropriate time with these for sale units or somebody who qualifies to be able to rent it to somebody else who qualifies? And you could put rental, rather than just saying it has to be owner occupied, we could put income requirements for if it were to be rented. If you're gonna rent it, then you can only rent to 80% AMI or something like that. So it's just food for thought, because I have a real concern with watching rental units get displaced by for sale townhomes. And then the second thing is, I really appreciate the thoughtfulness of the city and the councilwoman about, okay, we do these neighborhood plans. This is great. We follow the legislative rezoning or perhaps not. And we see what comes in out of these neighborhood plans. And we saw all these rezonings that were starting to get alarming from a displacement standpoint. So I appreciate that sensitivity and encourage the city staff, knowing how big your workload is, though, to find a standard solution for this that's written, because we're getting these to come in and I'm like, okay, great. They're doing 1 out of 5 units at 110%. What's the next person going to do? It's just whatever they negotiate with the city at that time. I would really like some standards to go off by. I would like my decisions to be plan-based and really clear. And I know the city's working on it, but I think this is the second one of these I've seen in, I don't know, the last 6 months. And it's just, to the extent we can get that done, I'd be most appreciative to assure that I'm making plan-based decisions.
And as you know, like, I'm looking housing choice, looking at some of these issues. So like, we're hoping that, well, it's not going to solve everything, because that would be great, but it's part of what they're looking at, right?
Of course, you're always a step ahead of me. Thank you.
Can I give, sorry to interrupt, can I give a little context on the rental?
Thank you. I'm sorry. We kind of closed our public comments, so we're just in the comments of the board. But thank you.
Okay.
But with that said, I think it clearly meets criteria, and I will be voting in favor.
I just want to thank the applicant for bringing this forward in a way that conforms with the guidance from the West Area Plan memo. I'm actually encouraged to see that resulting in applications of smaller scale development that incorporate affordability. I think that's really cool. So thank you so much for bringing this and working with the city for a solution that worked for you and meets our broader housing goals. Similarly, I think, Heidi, to what you were getting at, I feel a little bit confused about our mandate in light of this memo and how to fit that in with the criteria. Housing is my field of work, and I know a lot about the details of these agreements and how to structure the deed restrictions and things like that. And I don't know how deep I'm supposed to like poke at that when it's not in our criteria, but we're, you know, kind of not supposed to be approving projects without the affordability. So it's left me in a little bit of a gray area of how I approach these. But I think it's a great application. I'm excited on the for sale affordability, and I'll be in support as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would just maybe add to that, Mary. I mean, on its face, if we put the memo on a shelf, I mean, this location is a transition from Federal, the adjacency to Barnum Park, you know, kind of with the BRT coming, like clearly kind of makes a lot of sense for kind of a transition to more of a townhome, row home, you know. So I think very consistent with the plan and particularly West Area Plan. And then you kind of layer the memo on top and it adds this question that, I mean, I think it's very clear that with the housing agreement, and I agree, wonderful that the applicant is able to offer that as part of the for sale package of these townhomes, and so really give them a lot of credit. But yeah, it's kind of a funny question where because of the memo, then now we talk about the affordable housing agreement, even though it's not supposed to be about the project. So, but I think it very much meets the plan criteria. Gosha.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. I think I agree or understand the anxiety about kind of uncertainty and all these different projects come in a different format, but I think there's value in those kind of real world tests, right? Because if somebody can prove that they can make it work, that's kind of data that feeds to the Unlocking Housing Choices project. So I see value in it.
Yes, that's great point, Gosha, and hope that all of this data goes into that effort to go, okay, well, if they can make it at 110, right, then maybe that's our threshold.
Yeah.
And we use these cases to write what the code is for us in the review criteria.
I mean, quick response to your comment about rental. The developer would have to hold that unit and own it and rent it, and they want to sell it because it's for sale product. So I also appreciate the concept, kind of the awkwardness of that scenario, that like we would mandate that the developer actually holds on to that one unit and turns it into a rental property over time. But all that said, I will be supporting it today.
Okay, so no other comments, if there's a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move to recommend that City Council approve application 2025I-00022, rezoning 3025 West Third Avenue from ESUDX to ERX3, finding that applicable review criteria have been met.
I'll second.
Great. I will roll call vote and start with you, Mary.
Aye.
Melissa?
Aye.
Alicia?
Aye.
Heidi?
Aye.
Gosha?
Aye.
And I vote aye as well. That has been recommended on to City Council. Thank you so much for being here and presenting. And with that ends our regular agenda. I did want to take a moment during our chair time to recognize Gosha. I know it's kind of a, you know, not less exciting meeting for your final meeting, but as I've shared with you before, it has been such a pleasure serving on this board with you. I have learned so much from you. I know that I speak for others, and so thank you very much for your service to the city, 2 terms on planning board, and continuing to work on different task forces, and so I hope we can continue to tap your knowledge, and we have a certificate of appreciation for you.
Thank you.
Thank
you so much, and thank you to all my colleagues. Wish there was a larger group to address, but I'll address the 5 women, power women, here in the room today. it's just been such an honor and privilege to serve on this, Betty. I think there's just so much experience and different perspectives. And every time I come here, it feels like going to class. I always learn something from you guys. So really appreciate that, Alicia, on the screen. Everybody else who served over the years, past 6 years. Yeah, it's been just great pleasure and wonderful experience.
Amazing.
I was going to was appointed to the Looking Housing Choices Task Force. So I'll continue for coming to this building this year.
Very grateful that your expertise will carry
out.
You on that.
I was worried what I was going to do with my Wednesdays. And the first meeting is on Wednesday in July. So it's going to be a smooth transition.
And just for this board, I think we're looking to try and do something in August, kind of when we have more of our body and our new members, and it'll be a little bit of a thank you to Goja, but also a kind of welcoming of our new members once they're seated and kind of transition and get to know each other. So we'll do that probably maybe after the second meeting in August to all kind of go out after planning board or something.
And I suggested to invite other past board members and CPD staff like we used to do that.
Yeah.
So it'd be kind of fun reunion for meet up with some
I was going to say, if you guys want to suggest, like, because I have memories of only up until a certain point of like, so if you want to suggest people that I should invite, like.
I'm sure Andrew and Annalise have the names of the members that served in the past. Mm-hmm. I think it's great to invite everybody.
Yeah.
Not everybody shows up, but it's kind of fun to see who served in the past years.
I think there might be an email list from when we did that event for kind of past chairs when Joel rolled off.
Yes.
We did the event at DCPA or whatever.
Yeah.
That might be a good email
check
list.
I'll check with Andrew.
That was great. Be nice to do something like that again.
And a couple of things that I wanted to remind you guys is like, I was just trying the girls from there before you got here, that the meeting on the 16th of July, if you can please make sure to put it in your calendar. I'm really hoping that we're going to have the new members, but I'm not sure yet. So, and we have a bunch of really big cases there. So like it'd be great if we could make sure to have a quorum.
I'll definitely be there.
That's great. And I'm going to be out all of July. So, but I'll be, you can reach me on email, only that I'm going to be in Australia. So it might be delayed. So if you have something urgent, please make sure to copy Eric or Andrew. Andrew's going to be covering for anything urgent, but anything that can be replied in like 7 hours, I'll be replying and getting back to you. And he's going to cover the meeting of the 16th.
We will not bother you.
I'll be working. Yeah, like 5 hours a week. So like just so I can stay on top of things. So like I'm totally like, don't feel bad about emailing me. It's just that you're not going to be able to get a response in the hour.
I know this is atypical. Is there anything we can do to help with onboarding for you while you're gone? If that timing.
I can let you know. I mean, I told Caitlin that depending on how quickly it happens, you'd be great. Like if she wants to meet them, if like, so that they can like arrange a coffee or something, like so that they can be. We're canceling also, I think I told everyone we're canceling July 2nd, so don't come on July 2nd. So yeah, it's a little uncertain because I don't know the timing of anything, but I'll keep you posted.
Okay.
I think that's it. And we were thinking of like end of August for the, like the second meeting of August. Oh, and the other thing that I was thinking the last Wednesday of October.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
If we can plan for, like, if you guys want to think of something to have
as a retreat.
A retreat. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can start thinking of ideas, and if you have something, then we can plan it, because I feel like we always get to a point, it's like coming up and no one can make it. So it's better if we plan it in advance.
Yeah. And I do think we will want to plan on that one on the 29th, just because we haven't had a work session for a little while, and we'll have new members. So I think it'll be a good opportunity to kind of bring them in on that. So yeah, if you have particular topics that you want to make sure we're covering, maybe it'd be, I don't know if you guys will be far enough along in Walking Housing Choices, but maybe some of those conversations. So feel email me, Fran, and we'll kind of start lining up an agenda for that work session. Thanks for that reminder.
And I'm going to figure out if we do it here or not, so if we can get the room and we can send an invitation.
In October.
October, like the third Wednesday of October?
Try. We'll see if it's available.
Okay.
Oh, and so are we not going to the Evans School now?
Right now?
Yeah. Okay.
I am.
You are welcome.
That was my plan.
you are welcome to come join with Gosha. We knew it was going to be such a small group. It felt like a little anticlimactic to celebrate Gosha that way for when she had such a big contribution.
Gosha multiple times.
That is what it is.
Mary, do you
want to
go?
Yeah.
It's a date.
Possibly.
Yeah.
And
Alicia, I hope you guys keep talking. I'm going to adjourn planning board. Feel better, Alicia. We will all see each other soon.
I can't let your class
thank you.
Bye.
Just like add more and enrich in the paintings more, add layers. You know, some might only be read by art historians. You know, we put things in there for people who love, you know, tattoos. We put things for people in there who love jewelry. Like we're always finding ways to kind of code the painting and add layers. But it's also just for, you know, I make the kind of paintings that I love to look at. So I'm always wanting to make a painting that's like a rich experience that I want to spend time looking at over and over and over again. And so I think that's the kind of experience that I want people to have is like, slow down, you know, spend some time with one of the works and don't rush through it. And you know, that was something that I was affirmed for me when I, in one of my first sort of touring exhibitions in Canada, it was I think 2007, and I had a couple of those huge paintings, one of the one that's here, The Triumph of Mischief, and I was just in the museum taking pictures, install pictures or whatever, and this elderly couple came in and sat on one of the benches, and they spent about half an hour with just one of those paintings, talking, pointing, looking, and then they moved to another bench and spent another half an hour with another painting, and that was such a high compliment to me that I had achieved that sort of, you know, way of making a painting that people would want to live with, that they would want to spend time looking at.
Yeah, when we were installing the exhibition, our install crew, with just one painting, we're having competitions to see who could find the most amount of rats in the painting. And I actually won. And not because I'd spent time with it, but, you know, but it really was. It was like, you know, there are things hidden. They're like, they're tucked away in little
Should
corners.
Should we set the challenge? Try and find the most number of rats and try and count the penises.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say that?
You're highly unlikely to probably get the right number of penises because there's a lot. There are a lot. Which actually kind of, you know, you touched on something earlier about kind of decolonizing sexuality and, you know, kind of presenting, everything is presented in this exhibition as normal. You know, there is nothing in the exhibition that inherently is sexual or anything. It's really the lenses in which we're looking through that impact the way that we see the work. And so one of the things that I ask of all of you when you go through the exhibition is when you feel anything from the exhibition, whether it's sadness, whether it's humor, whether it is embarrassment, whether you're shocked or appalled by something, what lens are you looking through that gets you to feel that way? Is it something that, you know, through your life experience, through your education, your religion, you know, your family beliefs, whatever that may be, are they lenses that you put there, or are they lenses that unknown to you did someone else put there and that is causing you to react in a particular way? Because that's true. Like, again, when we're talking about the human body, I'm going to totally tell myself here. So you know what story is coming. So back in October, I was in Korea for an exhibition of indigenous art from our collection that we were touring two venues in Korea. And my hotel caught on fire. It's like, seriously, I'm gonna, like, it was like, literally, I walked into the lobby and there's like smoke everywhere and I had to walk through 3 inches of water from the hoses. It was crazy. And I had to be out of the hotel for a while. I go and eat lunch, and I'm sitting there thinking, what am I going to do with my time? And everyone kept saying, oh, you got to go to a Korean spa. And I was like, I am not going to a Korean spa. I've never been to a Korean spa. There's like, at least the wet part of it is what they call it. There's no clothes. And I'm like, I am not doing that. And then I'm sitting there and I was like, I'm a hypocrite. He up here constantly talking about how the human body is normal. There's nothing inherently sexual about it. But I have those lenses. I have those interpretive, goggles on. And I was like, damn it, I'm going to do this. And I did. And it was no big deal. Everyone who was in there was like, there were like, high school kids who were best friends who were just hanging out like that. There were, grandparents and their grandchildren, it was no big deal. And I was like, oh my God, I had put all of this, fear about it, but it was Kent's work that caused me to kind of question why I felt a particular way and gave me the courage to actually push through and do it. And like, now I highly recommend it, honestly.
So when people ask me, what do I want people to take away from this exhibition? Take your clothes off. Yeah.
That's a...
I'm glad I inspired you to get into your birthday suit.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, there are museums that have done like nude tours of exhibitions before. I am not doing that. I am not doing it.
Well, that actually, I was researching George Catlin, and there was one representation in his body of work of that two-spirit, gender-fluid person. Dance to the Berdash is the painting that he made, and it was a scene depicting that two-spirit person being honored by the man that they had had sexual relationships with. And I became obsessed with that painting and made a few works in response to that painting, because it was that one painting I could find in his body of work that showed a two-spirit person. But in his journal, I found his own writing about it. And so talk about that lens of moral bias and fear. He said, this is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen, and I wish for it to disappear before it can be more fully recorded.
Mm.
So it was, that gave me even more inspiration to make my work and to get past that very limited understanding.
It was probably that Mischief turned him down at the time. Yeah. So this is an awful segue when we're talking about penises and nudity to then go to talk about monumental size. But it's literally the next question. So I would be remiss not to address the 12 foot by 24 foot elephant in the room, and no, I'm not talking about Miss Chief's member. The works in this exhibition play with scale, ranging from small and intimate to monumental and grand. Has your approach to scale changed over your career, and how do you choose the scale to tell the stories you intend to share?
Well, I think the at first, when I first encountered those very large Bierstadt paintings, I was in awe of them, right? I was like, oh, these are incredible. There's something. And, when they were originally painted and shown, this is, pre-cinema, and they were actually hung, in galleries that people could experience them as though they were watching a movie or something, or going to the theater. So I loved that idea of the grandeur, the scale of them, and I wanted to emulate that. And then as my work evolved and I actually was inspired to make history paintings, the authority of the history painting, so much of that comes through the scale. And, I've been working with that landscape genre for a number of years, a good 10 years already. And then I was at the Prado looking at these Spanish history paintings, and I stood in front of this one monumental painting, which was about the execution of these men who during the Spanish Revolution, and it just kind of stopped me in my tracks. It just had such power. The the composition was kind of restrained. There was emotion in the men's faces as they were facing this firing squad, and it just kind of like really motivated me to move more in that direction. I thought, if I can take that scale and I can take that skill and authorize indigenous experience into art history with this authority of, you know, these large paintings, that will really honor our experiences and our truth and bring them forward with that same authority. You know, I was really struck by the fact this artist had made this painting like 150 years ago, and that's what I really thought that I wanted to do with my work, was make paintings that would transcend time. 150 years from now, people will look at them and say, that happened. And so that's really, I think, the scale evolved over time. But process-wise, you don't just go from, you know, a small painting to large painting without sort of figuring out how you're going to get there. And, another inspiration was being in the Louvre and looking at Rubens' cycle on Maria de' Medici, 24 massive paintings. And I looked at the dates of those, like it only took 4 years to make these paintings. And so that sort of really charged me to kind of like figure out in my studio with my studio assistants, how can we make paintings at that scale and how can we make more of them? And so we figured